Welcome to show number 307, Irrational Exuberance. Welcome to another edition of Money Matters. My name is Mark Cuniverti. Shortened version due to the COVID shutdown. Welcome, everyone. Before we begin, remember, discussions in this show should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I'm an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Indices mentioned are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. There may be varying degrees of risk. Investors should be prepared to bear loss, including total loss of principal. The opinions expressed are my opinions only and may not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, the station, its staff members, or underwriters. Money Matters is about money, as money does matter, and the matters of money affect us all in some way or another, whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it. Money Matters is about you. So, boy, here we go again, right? So the Dow, all-time high at 29,500. Somewhere in early February, and then, of course, COVID shutdown hit, and the Dow plummeted to around 18,300, somewhere in there. And as approved by regulators and said in the articles in late February and first week of March, it was approved. So I can say this. We did say that the market was not considering the effects of COVID that could have happened. And I was looking back in February, back at SARS and what happened there. And a couple of friends of mine had sent me some photographs back in February of Wuhan in the Hubei province. And he was showing me that Wuhan was pretty much vacant. So I thought, wow, the Dow, we knew the Dow was going to be affected by the tariffs. And we expected the Chinese GDP, which is all the gross domestic product, it's all the money exchanged for goods and services in China. We expected that to drop from 6% to 4% just because of the tariffs. Then when I saw that these cities were empty, I thought, So I looked back at 2003 to the SARS virus. And the SARS had made the Chinese GDP drop about 1%. And at that time, China was about the fifth largest economy in the global environment, and the SARS had only infected about 10,000 people. Now, it had a higher mortality rate of about 10%, but seeing as it dropped Chinese GDP about 1%, and that was the fifth largest economy in the globe, and I saw a vacated city, that's when I penned the article and said that we were going to initiate sales about the first week of March. And again, it was approved, so I can say that. And we published it, and we did. And then we started buying somewhere around the third week of March, and that was good. But then this thing just ran way too far, and in my opinion, too far. Of course, nobody can forecast market direction, and I'm no different. And with the Dow screeching off its COVID lows of 18,531 on March 23rd, it screeched up past 26,000. And remember, it was an all-time high at 29,551 on February 12th. Almost 11,000 points of correction, which compiled about a 37% hammering of the Dow. It was seemingly in defiance of economic fundamentals. And now, of course, it rose around 27% from the 2020 lows, and did so in only about 10 weeks. Not surprising, seeing as it only took 5 weeks to crater to the March lows from its all-time high. So these were definitely historic movements for sure. Investors have seldom, if ever, seen such volatility, considering the magnitude of the wild swings we've seen. The 08 and 09 bank crisis was a close second in terms of ferocity, followed by the 2001 dot-com crash. But you have to consider both 01 and 08 and 09 were caused by monetary excesses, which means there was what we might call manias and things where things have just bidded up too high, where our current crisis can be attributed to the microscopic life form called corona. Although differing in cause for the three crashes that I'm referencing, the result could be said to be along the very same lines, which is a reduction in consumer spending coming from falling demand. And of course, with COVID, it was the shutdown. We've all were told to stay home. The difference of 08 and 09 and, of course, 2001 is that the correction witnessed a purging of financial assets, things that were overbought, things that were speculated in, what we basically call a mania, set off by a buying spree of assets.com in 01 and real estate in 08. And that was followed by a debt and liquidity crisis. The economies of much of the world, and therefore many investors and consumers, suffered from the resulting contraction when the debt was repudiated. Both the 08 and 01 crisis could be categorized, like I said, as manias, with the irrational, consistent, and ongoing purchases of an asset continue to ascend until buyers can no longer afford the higher prices. It is said, high prices, correct, high prices. COVID, as you know, is something entirely different. Whereas no mania-fueled buying spree led to an eventual correction in prices that had risen to irrational levels, this correction was actually mechanically induced by the voluntary cessation of purchases and goods of services brought about by the, quote, shutdown. Consumers worldwide basically stayed home. Much of what is normally bought and sold, therefore, wasn't. Commerce for many businesses ground to a halt. Not all businesses suffered, however. Consumers, us, still had to eat. We had to shelter and communicate, and did so using the conduit of the internet, of course. Those businesses that could provide human necessities through this conduit of the internet, and the businesses which made up, serviced, or protected that conduit flourished. Indeed, the reality that some businesses only survive through the destruction of other businesses by stealing their customers, a radically altered business landscape was thrust upon us faster than anyone thought possible. The world has changed. The way business is conducted has changed. And those changes are still evolving. Being a dynamic situation, during the uncertainty of COVID, however, what the business environment will morph into when we come out the other end is anyone's guess. The questions would be, will the stay-at-home economy go away or remain in some form or another? Will we see a blended stay-at-home, work-at-the-office type environment? What will happen to the commercial real estate marketplace if many businesses continue to allow employees to work from home? Will cost savings spur companies to rethink their entire concept of how business should be conducted? There are many unanswered questions. Indeed, when the crisis will be over is something no one knows. In fact, now we're looking at a possible spike in cases. The spike could be attributed to a variety of things. Have people become lackadaisical with their addressing and safety measures of COVID? Do the protests for the racial issue that we have in this country?
Will people standing shoulder to shoulder 10,000 in a protest spread the virus more vigorously? I can't imagine that that would not spread the virus more vigorously. Will the hotter weather slow down the virus? We thought that might happen. But Brazil, which is a climate that is opposite of ours as far as seasons are concerned, is having a massive outbreak of COVID. We thought that the hotter weather, the warmer weather, would kill off some of this virus, of course. So does hot weather, will hot weather kill it off entirely? That's doubtful. Did our economy open too early?
We saw something like that in the island of Hokkaido in Japan. They opened up after 3 weeks of shutdown and had to close back down again when cases spiked. Lord forbid if we'd have to do that, right? Whereas our previous crises had their distinct causes, dot-com, 9/11, the 08-09 real estate excesses, they were rooted in financial seedlings. COVID is indeed a new animal, literally. COVID has almost caused the entire human race to rethink both its individual and business priorities. As in this revaluation process,
many questions have never before been contemplated. Is the seemingly bipolar stock market logical?
Considering the uncertainty of COVID and its effect on the future of how we do things, one could argue the entire thing is up in the air in one big unknown, and for good reason.
As to what we can expect in the market in the following weeks and months,
all I can say is be very careful.
We may now be in the beginning of possibly another correction. Maybe it has run too far too fast. Where we go from here is anyone's guess.
We'll be right back with this edition of Money Matters. Welcome back to Money Matters. My name is Mark Cunabrody. Thanks for joining me on your community radio station. We're at show 307, and there's a term that we use in stocks called sector rotation.
Sector rotation in stocks means money moves from one area into another.
At any given time, certain areas of investing can be hot while others are not. Certainly during the period leading up to the dot-com stock mania, one could safely say technology stocks were in favor, and explosive price growth was a sought-after result by dot-com investors. Any stock with a dot-com moniker would be gobbled up by greedy investors looking for fast and furious gains. Meanwhile, the old stodgy stocks that paid consistent dividends like utilities or oil stocks may have been shunned in favor of the hot stocks of the day. Investors thought that the old stalwart stock names of oil, food, autos, you know who they are, and what have you, did not offer the lightning-fast explosive growth that a dot-com stock promised. Fast forward a few years and the dot-com stocks fell from favor. They were replaced by housing stocks and its various related sectors. Sector rotation can take place at any time and for a variety of reasons. A new discovery, such as a cure for cancer, could cause a sector rotation into healthcare or pharmaceutical stocks. History is rife with well-known sector rotations. A decade or so back, the health benefits of grape-related drinks, remember that, caused a rotation into the wine and beverage sectors. Texas oil bonanza caused oil and oil-related equipment producers to rally. The movement to alternative energy caused related stocks in that sector to rise, while hydrocarbon-type stocks may have fallen. The reality is sectors can fall in and out of favor, and for a variety of reasons. You can probably guess a few of those. It's this ebb and flow of investors' dollars that may cause stock prices in certain sectors to fall en masse for no other reason than a sector is becoming yesterday's news. Catch a hot sector early, and profits could be made. Be late to the party or stay too long, and falling stock prices reflecting investors vacating the sector for greener pastures could hurt portfolio balances. Early on in the COVID shutdown, most all areas of the stock market fell in concert. A few weeks in, and we noticed that investors' monies started to surface in a variety of different sectors. Biotech, pharmaceutical caught an early bid, as did the internet communication stocks, streaming movie companies, online retailing, and the companies that serviced and maintained the conduits of the stay-at-home businesses in the stay-at-home environment. Meanwhile, the obvious hardest-hit sectors were the vacation and travel stocks like hotels, theme parks, airlines, cruise ships, and similar sectors. Companies that, by their nature, facilitate people in close proximity to each other, like movie theaters and restaurants, also suffered. Sector rotation went into the stay-at-home economy stocks, causing a significant river of investor dollars to flow into certain sectors while other sectors fell. Last week, or about 3 weeks ago, we saw another sector rotation that took many investors and advisors by surprise, and it was fast and furious in its migration of dollars. Friday, June 5th, the Labor Department reported that May payrolls increased by 2.5 million jobs, shocking investors and analysts alike. Forecasters had called for another dreadful report following the sharp decline of 20.7 million jobs in the prior month. The gain of 2.5 million was the largest positive number of jobs going back to 1939. That report, coupled with investor exuberance, because of the fact that all 50 states were in a variety of various stages of reopening, caused an obvious sector rotation out of the stay-at-home stocks into what I call the get-away-from-home stocks, video conferencing, healthcare, online shopping, and other related sectors fell hard. While the hardest hit shutdown stocks like hotels and airlines and cruise ships, retail and other related areas rose, and some furiously fast and surprising. The stocks in these sectors had been stealthily lifting off their lows in the recent days leading up to the rotation, and the jobs report lit the afterburners of many of these companies. That was a clear example of nothing more than sector rotation, based on investor expectation that the lows in these stocks had already been reached, and that it was time to go shopping in the bargain basement of the stock market. Meanwhile, holders of the stay-at-home stocks were left scratching their heads as to what had happened. Nothing really specifically happened. It was sector rotation. We'll be right back with this edition of Money Matters. Welcome back, and I want to talk to you about a strategy of stop losses. that in my opinion and from my experience, remember I graduated in 1979 with a degree in economics with honors and been studying it my whole life, 2 months into the corona event, and the Dow was off about 17%.
It was up from a low of about 37%.
Now, some investors might have been delighted if their balances just got back to even. Maybe they're still waiting. And they didn't have any stops, perhaps, in their stock positions. Now, what are stops? Stops are sell points,
where a person essentially sells some of their stock positions as markets fall. And basically, your balances stop falling or at least slow down, as cash doesn't fall in value. Nominally, it might lose some purchasing power, but the numbers stay the same.
So by having more cash in your account, you have a little bit more stability. You reduce the volatility. However, I find that not many advisors or investors practice stops, these predetermined sell points. They go against the belief that the market always goes up over the long term. And that's the only strategy that one needs. I don't really believe in that myself.
Although buy and hold diehards are convinced they can just hold stocks forever, and that they never will basically sway from their strategy or belief that they will ever have to sell stocks. I'm never selling. It can happen that during market sell-offs,
all conviction can go out the window as life savings evaporate daily down the black hole of plunging markets. I think anyone that's been investing for a while knows that feeling. You tell yourself, I'm just going to stay and not sell. But as your balances continue to plummet, that kind of goes away and you start panicking. We've all been there. Watching day after day a sea of red ink in your balances
can be excruciating.
Probably doesn't do much for your overall mental or physical health either. Indeed, more than one heart attack, suicide, divorce,
or negative outcome
has resulted from such severe market crashes, such as the one we just witnessed. Although the Dow Jones Industrial Average dropped almost 40% in March, there have been worse corrections. 1929 saw an S&P correction of 86%. Can you imagine? To address the hand-wringing phone calls to advisors as life savings evaporate, the money management trade
can be said to have a solution for all ills.
Actually, it's two answers. Both might be put in a win-win spin scenario on an otherwise grim reality. The spin may be related to the client in two parts, at two different times, depending on an up or down market environment. Put simply, in up markets, the advisor is thought and claims to be a genius
and takes credit for the soaring balances. However, in down markets, the advisor, or perhaps even the investor himself, blames it on the markets, saying, well, the market's down, and so that's why your portfolios are down.
So let's get this straight. If the stock market goes up, you're a genius, and if the market goes down, it's the stock market's fault? Sounds pretty slick to me. Like I said, it's a win-win scenario for the paid money manager. I am not a fan of buy and hold. Imagine for a moment if a predetermined sell point or multiple sell points had been exercised in your account while the market fell. The resulting dry powder could be picking up stocks on sale at much lower levels
when the fall and if the fall eventually stops.
And usually I can safely say they do. Markets don't go down forever till the Dow hits zero, right? It's possible with sell points, possible, that not only had losses been prevented, but the resulting shopping spree
may mean substantial gains when and if markets rebounded.
Compare that to the reality of waiting for the markets to recover so you can get back to even. How do predetermined sell points work?
To envision proper money management, we can use an illustration. And that illustration would be to imagine playing a slot machine. And by the way, speaking of slot machines, Las Vegas has opened for business.
A simple narrative can almost help anyone to envision what a stop-loss strategy is. When someone decides to throw money at a slot machine, almost everyone, except those with a severe gambling addiction,
arrives at a point where they stop gambling.
Whether it's predetermined set point of, I promise not to lose more than $20 or $100, or it's 3 in the morning and I've lost $500, or you're just getting tired of pulling bills out of your wallet, they would eventually probably leave the table or the slot machine. In other words, they say enough is enough and they leave.
What they don't do is practice what they may be practicing in their portfolio management with the retirement accounts.
The narrative goes something like this.
I've heard advisors use this, and I've heard clients of advisors and investors themselves say this. Day one of the crash, you're not down far enough, don't worry about it. Day two of the crash, you're not down far enough, don't worry about it. Day 10 of the crash, you're down too far, you don't want to sell out now. Do you see the problem here? Imagine using that strategy at your local casino. You could end up broke with continued trips to the ATM until your entire life savings disappears down the proverbial slot. In a nutshell, and in my opinion, most people practice proper money management when gambling, but they do something entirely different with their retirement plans. Some of you out there might say that the market always comes back. Well, I would say never, as it was once said in a James Bond movie. What if someday it doesn't come back, or takes decades to do so? Hold for the long term? That depends how much long you have left in your term. We'll be right back with this edition of Money Matters. My name's Mark Cuniberti. Welcome back to this shortened edition of Money Matters. My name is Mark Cuniberti. You're listening to a show, Edition 307, Irrational Exuberance and Corrections. Money Matters is aired on about 66 stations nationwide. You may be hearing this pre-recorded, but in these shortened newscasts, they are pre-recorded for now. We plan on getting back to live radio eventually. We just have to have the state open up officially by the governor, of course. We are located in California, as most of you know. There have been crazier markets than the ones we have now, but more and more analysts and people that I know and trading professionals that I talk to are fessing up that this one is starting to top them all. The quickest fall from an all-time new high to not only an official correction, which is down 10%, but an all-out bear market designation, which is down 20%, and that occurred during the March downturn, only to be followed by an historic and blistering recovery, which placed the Dow within a healthy spitting distance of that all-time high 2 months later. Wild swings up and down, June 11th witnessed a 1,861-point hammering of the Dow Jones Industrial Average, down 7% from the day before. The next day, the Dow ricocheted up 477 points. Whoa! Professional traders love the volatility, which can bring fast profits. Day traders have come out of the woodwork, some shut in from the COVID-19 event, and some flush with cash from stimulus and unemployment checks. Indeed, trading volume is heavy, and theories abound as to what is to come next. Meanwhile, those not used to these casino-like markets and or just trying to save for retirement find the violent ups and downs not at all conducive to a full night's sleep. What is confusing everyone, including the heavyweight professionals like Warren Buffett, David Tepper, and other gigantic hedge fund managers, is the speed of the March fall and the subsequent lightning-fast recovery. Few, if any, forecasted such wild and violent swings, and the speed of the recovery in light of the obvious ailing economy was and is still an unexpected turn of events. Explanations and theories as to why markets are moving so violently included investors are eager to buy stocks at bargain prices, the Fed is throwing trillions into the economic feeding troughs of corporate America, and that trillions more are going directly to consumers. This analyst, and many of my peers, much of the market's recovery to the Federal Reserve's willingness to go all in to avoid a catastrophic collapse due to the COVID-19 shutdown, with trillions going to support dead assets like corporate bonds, trillions more to consumers and business owners, and even more trillions in quantitative easing, which is when the feds buy treasury debt, mortgage, and other public and private debt. The amount of money being injected everywhere means some of it is bound to find its way into the stock market, and it has. It's not to say the disconnect between the market and the economy makes total sense. Indeed, the argument could be made the Fed is doing what it always has done in recent decades, which is to throw money at corporate America in the hopes that
Fewer corporations will be vaporized in a bankruptcy. Others will be able to access the debt markets in order to survive, and that some of that money will trickle down to the workers. In contrast to the 08 and 09 crisis, this time around, more money is being shuttled into the hands of consumers and small businesses through liberalized unemployment programs and a variety of loan and care programs. This is not to say the all clear can be given. There are many realities that may dampen the exuberance that investors may have succumbed to in the recent market run-up. With last week's Dow 1,800 plus point hammering, stock participants may be rethinking just how bad or how good the economy may be coming out of the other side of the shutdown. Indeed, however, we may find we emerge from the COVID shutdown funk only to see a spike in new cases due to what some call premature reopening or mass protest gatherings due to the recent racial issues or lackadaisical attitude toward the virus itself. Other considerations would also have to include the damage done to the economy will be much worse than expected, will last longer than expected, and some damage will never be undone. The business landscape may be permanently altered, which will require some sort of adaptation or rethinking of how business should be conducted. This shift in business methodology may incur significant transitional costs, which will take time to unwind because of the resource and monetary allocation that in itself could cause more economic damage. Basically, what I'm saying here is that business is reworking itself. It's realizing that a lot of these costs that it incurred previously, perhaps by large rental spaces or retail spaces, a lot of this work can be done efficiently and for less money with people staying at home, which means the money doesn't have to be spent on these large facilities. This in itself is a major change on how business is conducted and possibly will be conducted. Indeed, many large companies have told their employees that they don't have to come back to work at the facility. They can stay at home. Twitter and other large companies are saying you can come back later, or in some cases, they don't have to come back at all. This is definitely going to affect the real estate market, the commercial real estate market, where other companies will be spreading out, perhaps like a Starbucks, taking some of the retail spaces that have been vacated, or they may renegotiate some of their contracts downward. Additionally, we will probably see a new economy where new businesses that cater to the internet conduit, the video conferencing and things of that sort are going to bloom. And in the process of other companies growing, there will be other companies that will not survive. We are indeed seeing some changes for sure. So with that, I'm going to conclude the show. It's been a pleasure. This has been show 307 of Money Matters. Money Matters, once again, is aired on 66 stations nationwide. And our website is moneymanagementradio.com. Our way of saying thank you for listening to your community radio station. The website is Agrata. My name is Mark Cuniberti. Thanks for listening. And if you have any questions, feel free to send me an email at news@moneymanagementradio.com. Remember, discussions in this newscast should not be considered as investment advice. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors, Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Views expressed are my opinions only and may not necessarily represent those of Cambridge, this station, its staff, management, or underwriter. I hold California Insurance License OL 34249. My name is Mark Cuniberti. Thanks for listening.